This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. August is a great time to cool down at the beach. Days like these, with family and friends relaxing and having fun, can seem like they'll never end. But the way the world's economy is going, they just might. Because the world is rapidly running out of sand. And it isn't just instrumental in shoring up our eroding beaches. It powers the construction that has led to increased urbanization with towering skyscrapers in more cities. It's also critical in smartphones, laptops, the cables that connect us to the internet. Sand mining has had devastating environmental consequences, and it's prompted violence as people scramble to get it. How did we get here? What can we do to fix it? And is there any alternative? Joining us from KPCC Public Radio in Pasadena, California, is Vince Beiser. He's the author of the forthcoming book, The World in a Grain, The Story of Sand and How It Transformed Civilization. Vince, welcome to 1A.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
We welcome your questions and thoughts about this sand shortage and the impact it may have on your life, especially if you're from a beach community like me. Maybe you've seen the consequences of a lack of sand where you are, but wherever you are, we'd love to hear from you. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. Vince, can we clarify, first of all, before we dive too deep in the conversation, what exactly we're talking about when we're talking about this sand? There's lots of different kinds of sand, so what are we referring to? Where does it come from? What's actually in it? What is the sand that we're talking about?
Okay, so you're right. There are lots of different kinds of sand. I mean, the word itself literally just means small pieces, grains of any hard stuff. Right. So you have sand that's made from ground up shells. You have sand that's made from volcanic rock, so on. But mostly what we're talking about is quartz sand. That's the most abundant kind of sand there is. And it's the most abundant thing in the world, actually. And that's the stuff that we use for making concrete, for making glass, for most of those things that you listed off. And basically what quartz sand is it's ground off little pieces of mountains. Right. So what happens is mountains are made mostly of rock, which contains often contains a lot of quartz, and they get weathered away. Rain and wind work on them over thousands of years, breaking off little pieces of them, little grains. Those grains get washed down the mountainsides by the rains. Those rains turn into rivers, which transport that sand all along where the rivers go, dropping it, you know, depositing it as they go. So that's why you find a lot of sand in riverbeds, at the places where rivers meet the oceans, which is beaches. And also along the way, you know, over thousands of years, rivers flood their banks, they change course over time. So you have a lot of sand that gets that's been left behind on what's now dry land.
We've got some pretty big deserts in this planet, the Sahara, the Gobi, and others. Is that the same kind of sand that we're talking about? Is that quartz sand or is that something else?
It's often quartz sand, but the problem with that sand is it's the wrong shape, believe it or not. Basically, desert sand gets eroded differently because it's being eroded by wind rather than water. It gets tumbled and tumbled and tumbled, and that breaks off the sharp edges and the corners of those little tiny grains. And as a result, desert sand is really, it's too round to really use for construction purposes. What you want sand to do when you're making it into concrete is to kind of lock together to form a strong structure. And desert sand is really, is too round for that. So it's like the difference between trying to build something out of a stack of marbles as opposed to trying to build something out of a stack of little tiny bricks.
Give me a sense of some of the big things that we use sand for that we are the most dependent on.
So the number one thing, we use sand for dozens and dozens of different things, as you mentioned, but the number one thing by far is concrete. And if you think about it, concrete is really the literal foundation of modern civilization. I mean, every building, every office block, an apartment building and shopping mall that's being built anywhere in the world uses concrete, and I mean hundreds, thousands of tons of concrete. And concrete is basically just sand and gravel that's been stuck together with cement. So we use literally billions and billions of tons of sand every year for concrete. There's also asphalt, right? The black stuff that our roads are made out of. Roads, highways are made out of concrete or asphalt. Either way, they're basically just sand that's been stuck together. So that's what, you know, probably 90% of our sand goes for. And that's what's really creating the problem, is this huge demand for concrete to build cities, which are exploding all over the world, which are growing faster than ever before in human history.
We're speaking to Vince Beiser, a journalist and the author of The World in a Grain. We'd love to hear from you, too. Email 1A at WAMU.org. Vince, can you clarify just exactly where we stand with this shortage? Bill wrote on our Facebook page, "I have a really hard time believing there is a sand shortage. Beach erosion? That is a real issue. But a sand shortage? Going to need some solid science behind that claim." Vince, how do we know that we're running out?
So,
I think it should be noted, first of all, by the way, Vince, that beach erosion and the sand shortage are allied problems. They're connected, aren't they?
Exactly. They're related, but they're related but different problems. It's different. There's a different sort of process at work, which I'm happy to talk about if you want. But so when I say there's a sand shortage, I don't literally mean that we're going to run out of, we're going to come down to the very last grains of sand, that there's going to be, you know, gangs of road warrior bikers battling it out for the last, you know, handful of grains on the planet.
That would make a really crappy Mad Max movie. That would not.
It would.
Yeah.
It would
be terrible. Water, I can believe. Sand, eh.
Sand, eh.
Not really. Yeah.
But here's the thing. It's very similar to what's happening with oil and gas, right? There's still a lot of oil and gas, natural gas in the world. But the stuff that's easy to get, easy and cheap to get, we've pretty much tapped out. And we're having to go further and further and really often do more and more damage to the environment to get at the stuff that's left. That's why we're having to turn to things like fracking to get gas, or to do deep offshore drilling, you know, going down miles under the seabed to get at the oil, right? Because the stuff that's left is harder and harder to get to. Something very similar is happening with sand. There's a lot of sand, of course, in the world. But the stuff that's easiest to get to, the stuff that's closest to the cities where it's going to be used, has often either been tapped out or sometimes literally paved over, right? I mean, here in Los Angeles, where I live, most of the sand that built this city and a lot of Southern California is from a town called Irwindale, which used to be miles outside of the city. Now it's a suburb. It's an area that's completely surrounded by shopping malls and housing developments and so on. Nobody wants a big, ugly sand pit anymore right next to their nice housing development. So that sand pit really can't be used much anymore. So to get the sand, builders are having to go further and further out, which makes the price go up a lot, because sand's really heavy. And once you start having to transport it, the price goes up a lot. And also very often to do more damage to get it, because it's harder to get at. Now, let me say, this is not here in the United States and in most of the developed world, in Europe and so on, it's not such a big problem. Why? Because we have a pretty good set of rules and regulations about where and when and how you harvest sand, and pretty good enforcement for those rules. Not always. I mean, there's definitely some problems and some damage that's being done in this country by sand mining, but it's not nearly as bad as what's happening in the developing world. Yeah, that's where it's...
And we heard from some of you about what you see in terms of sand mining where you are. Barlinen wrote on our website, the1a.org, "Riverbeds and beaches aren't the only places to mine sand. It's also mined in state parks, at least in Michigan it is." Vince, I think we should also be clear that a lot of the growth in infrastructure, both in the U.S. and around the world, has literally been built on the sand. You know, you think about that parable about building a house on the rock versus building a house on the sand, but a lot of, particularly California, has been built on sand. Downtown San Francisco, the whole financial district, is built on infill that is literally the rubble from the 1906 Great Earthquake and Fire. So this is not new, nor is it a trifling part of how we've built our big cities.
That's right. Well, so that's another thing that we use sand for, is to literally create artificial land. You're absolutely right. Parts of San Francisco, not only built on the the wreckage from the earthquake, but also from sand dredged from the bottom of the San Francisco Bay. Same with a lot of the Manhattan riverfront. Same with Balboa Island here in Los Angeles, Treasure Island in San Francisco. But those things are tiny compared to land building that's going on in other places around the world. I mean, you might have seen pictures of those crazy palm tree-shaped islands in Dubai. These are enormous pieces of artificial land that are literally just sand that's been scooped up off the bottom of the Persian Gulf. Around the world, in the last 20 years or so, human beings have created about 5,000 square miles of new land out of sand. That's about an area about the size of Connecticut.
Let's talk a little bit more about what's happening beyond cities. I want to play a clip from a man named John Oman. He has a restaurant called Liam's, which sat on Nauset Beach in Massachusetts. And then a storm stripped away the sand that kept his restaurant structurally sound.
I was in the building when a wave hit. The waves would crest right in front of Liam's and just come slamming down. Boom. 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 Hurt your ears. You sit there and you watch 28 years of your life in building a business essentially hanging off of a sand cliff. And you knew that at that moment, there was no going back.
John Oman telling the story of what happened to Liam's on Nauset Beach in Massachusetts. That clip, by the way, is from a piece produced by Ethan Brooks called When the Waves Hit. Now, you've got sand erosion on beaches that's increasing because of climate change. Beaches are shrinking along both coasts from rising tides and storms that are strengthened by climate change. You've got the ocean around Miami Beach rising a third of an inch each year. And let's not forget that all of the beach, basically on South Beach, basically all of it is imported sand. Very, very little of that was there before the Army Corps of Engineers got involved. Vince, this feels like a very kind of toxic brew for development in the U.S., particularly along the coasts. But how dire are we talking? I mean, could this mean that America's beaches could cease to exist?
It's a really big problem, I'll tell you. I mean, in southern Florida is one of the places that I went to while I was researching my book, because there at the, you know, in one of America's biggest vacation lands, Miami Beach, Fort Lauderdale, those beaches are eroding so fast, they're literally disappearing. And there, they have literally run out of sand. And by that, I mean, what's happening is beaches are eroding because of all those things you mentioned, but also because of development, because we've built so many marinas and jetties and man-made structures along the coast that it blocks the flow of incoming sand that used to come and naturally replenish those beaches, right? Beaches are always getting eroded, but in the natural course of things, they also, a natural beach will be replenished by fresh sand coming down on the ocean currents. But now we've blocked the sand that's coming along in those currents. And this has been going on for a couple of decades in southern Florida. And their solution was, oh, we'll just go offshore and vacuum up a bunch of sand from the ocean bottom and blast it onto the beach, which is what they do in most of the world.
And I hate to interrupt you, Vince, but I just want to be clear. You're not being hyperbolic. I've seen these machines. These are gigantic barges with a huge hose that literally vacuums sand up from the floor of the Atlantic Ocean and belches it out onto the coastline.
Exactly. You got it. I mean, it's a big, fat pipe, and it's just literally, yeah, just shooting that sand up there. And that works fine as long as you've got that sand to grab. But they have literally in Miami-Dade County, in Broward County, where Fort Lauderdale is, they have literally, and I mean literally, literally, run out of sand. They've used up all the sand they can get from the ocean bottom. So for now, they're having to truck it in. They're having to go about 100 miles inland, dig up the sand from a pit in central Florida, and haul it out to the coast in trucks. It's a lot more expensive. That's a lot worse for the environment, all that extra truck traffic. But they don't really have a choice, right? Those places are dependent on beaches for their economy. And also increasingly, as you said, because people are realizing we need those beaches as a buffer against the ocean.
Brady tweeted, I work for a construction materials company, and on the West Coast, sand is very market dependent. In some areas, we waste millions of tons of sand a year because no one needs it. We did get a number of comments from our listeners about the nature of sand mining, including this listener who left a note in our inbox.
This is David Swan calling from Saugatuck, Michigan. In the state of Michigan, we have 273 acres of protected critical dunes. The critical dunes drive our tourist-based economy. Interestingly, the Department of Environmental Quality, the same agency that has lost a number of people regarding the Flint water crisis, also oversees the use of sand in the state of Michigan. Even though sand mining has been prohibited since 1998, they just recently approved a removal of 200,000 tons of sand from the mouth of the Kalamazoo River.
Vince, I wonder if we could talk a little bit more about sand mining. Thank you, David, by the way, for sharing your thoughts with us. It sounds like sand mining is an inelegant and imperfect solution at best. How well is our current mining infrastructure meeting the need?
Well, as I say, here in the United States, there's, you know, there are definitely some issues. I mean, the Michigan sand dunes, like that caller just mentioned, and they're still mining sand from the bottom of the San Francisco Bay, which a lot of environmentalists think is really doing a lot of erosion on the nearby beaches. But by and large, I think there's an adequate supply. There's, you know, the system's working reasonably well. What you are seeing, though, in this country, I think, which really relates to the first part of your show, is the price of sand, the price of construction sand, has about quintupled in about the last 30 years or so. And that, I believe, I haven't seen any, you know, hard research on this, but I have to believe that's one of the reasons that the price of housing is going up. Because one of the most, you know, critical components of the actual house itself is going up, and it's going up fast, and that's only going to continue.
We'll continue this conversation in a moment, but let me squeeze in one more quick question from John, who asked, I understand that sand is pulverized rock that nature has pulverized. Can't we make machines that pulverize rocks into sand?
Short answer is yes, we can. And we do in some places. They manufacture sand for use. Two problems with it. One is it's often not quite the right shape, because when you pulverize rock like that, that sand can be often too sharp and too angular because it hasn't been eroded at all, number one. But number two, the biggest problem is it's a lot more expensive.
Kind of no substitute for what nature has done with the sand. We'll continue our conversation in a moment with Vince Beiser, the author of The World in a Grain, the story of sand and how it transformed civilization. We talked about the difference in the way that the U.S. is dealing with its need for sand and how that need is playing out around the world, including some incredibly violent behavior to try to just get people's hands on land that has sand that can be exploited. We'll talk about that, and we'll consider whether there are alternatives to sand. What else might we be able to use for concrete? What about hempcrete? Stay close. Before we get back to our program, we would love your help with tomorrow's program about another one of the effects of climate change. We'll be exploring Tangier Island, a tiny crab fishing community in Maryland, in the middle of Chesapeake Bay. Rising sea levels are literally submerging the island little by little. Eventually, Tangier Island could be America's first real casualty of climate change. What about where you live? Are you worried about the changing climate or the rising seas consuming a place that is important to you? Leave us a voicemail, 855-236-1A1A. Where in America would you like to see more protection against climate change? If nothing is done, what do you fear will be lost? Tell us your story, 855-236-1A1A. 1A1A. Or you can use our new app, 1A Vox Pop, to send us a radio quality audio file and to keep up to date on future topics. You can download 1A Vox Pop, VOXPOP, in the App Store, and we'll share some of your stories tomorrow on 1A. Back now to our conversation with Vince Beiser, the author of The World in a Grain. Still time to get in some of your questions and thoughts about the state of sand around the world. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. Vince, before we continue, could you talk a bit about the environmental impacts of this loss of sand? Are there certain parts of the world, are there certain populations in the world that are feeling the effects of this sand deficit and of the mining more than others? Is it being particularly felt in some places or in certain ecosystems?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the problem isn't so much that the absence of sand, it's the process of getting that sand out, right? Because basically, the best and the easiest to get at sand is the stuff that you find at the bottom of rivers, river bottom sand. It's nice and clean. It's been well sorted. It's usually high quality stuff, and it's really easy to get. All you need to do is send out a boat with a suction pipe on the bottom, suck up that sand into your dredge, bring it in. Easy. The problem is that can do terrible damage to whatever is living in that river, right? First of all, when you strip up the bottom of a river, anything that was living there, any kind of aquatic life or plants or whatever, well, they're pretty much gone. Secondly, once you stir up all that sand and all the muck that was on the bottom of the river there, it clouds up the water, which can suffocate whatever fish were swimming around in there. And then it also blocks the sunlight from getting through to whatever plant life needs sunlight down there. So it can really do a terrible number on the river ecosystems themselves. This is happening in a big way in India. For instance, India's National Supreme Court recently warned about this. They said that sand mining was wiping out fish and bird populations all over the country. The other thing that it does is it can really damage the river itself. It can cause the river banks to collapse. And that often takes out, that means farmers' fields or even whole villages can go sliding right into the river. And we've seen that. I wrote a piece about that happening in Vietnam for National Geographic. That's also one of the things I talk about in the book. But it's happening in many, many countries around the world, that kind of erosion.
Can we stick with India for just one second? That's one of the places where you've documented violence in the search for sand. It's a kind of a, and I hope I'm not being hyperbolic in saying this, but a kind of a sand mafia that has sprung up in India. Is that a fair way to characterize it?
That it sounds completely crazy, but that is absolutely the case. I mean, that's what the Indian press calls them, is the sand mafia. And they really and truly are. What's happened is there's so much demand for sand in India, which is growing incredibly fast, right? Their economy is booming and their cities are growing like crazy. And that's created such a demand that organized crime has moved into the business in a lot of places. And those guys will just tear up sand wherever they can find it, regardless of the damage that it causes. And to get away with it, they do what organized crime does everywhere. They pay off cops, they pay off government officials. And if you really get in their way, they will kill you. Hundreds of people have been murdered over sand in the last few years. In fact, just about a week ago, an environmental activist in India who was one of the people trying to fight against this was stabbed to death just a few days ago.
What are Indian governments doing about this?
So it's a very mixed bag. I mean, there's a lot of talk about it. It's in the press a lot. And it's not something they can ignore because, as I said, I mean, there have been police officers killed. There's been government officials killed. Lots of journalists have been killed or attacked or threatened. They talk a lot about cracking down. But what I found when I went there is that when you get down to the ground level, to the actual, you know, police officers and local government officials whose job it is to crack down on these sand miners, either they're on the take, they're getting bribes to look the other way, and or they're scared. I mean, several of them told me to my face, we don't want to go after those guys because we don't want to get shot. And as a result, often not a lot gets done.
Is there an equivalent to this sand mafia in the U.S. or elsewhere?
Not in the U.S. There is some a certain amount of illegal sand mining that happens here in the U.S. They've got a problem with it on Long Island in New York. There's this problem where people will go and illegally dig up a big pile of sand from, you know, some protected area where they're not supposed to be digging. They'll dig up sand, sell it in New York City to developers, and then fill in the hole that they've made with toxic waste. So that's a problem. But it's not nearly on the scale that you see in India, but you do find it in Kenya, in Indonesia, in Vietnam, in a lot of other developing countries. There's been really lethal violence. In Indonesia, there was a couple of activists who were trying to stop sand miners from tearing up their local village fields who were tortured to death. In Kenya, there was about a year ago, there was a big outbreak of violence between sand miners and farmers whose livelihood was getting wrecked by these sand miners, and about 11 people were killed in the fighting between them.
Let me get to some of your questions and thoughts now for Vince Beiser, the author of The World in a Grain. Richard has a question about concrete. Richard wants to know, can concrete be recycled?
Concrete can be recycled, and it is being recycled to a certain extent in a lot of places, which is a good thing. However, that said, the amount that's being recycled is really a drop in the bucket compared to the amount of fresh new concrete that's being made every year. And the problem with recycled concrete is you can use it for some things, like you can use it for road base, like the very, you know, the foundation of a new road, but you can't use it for a lot of other things. Like, it's just not high quality enough to use, say, for the walls of a high-rise building. And it's also tends to be kind of expensive once again. I mean, unfortunately, the cheapest thing is to get fresh, virgin sand to make new concrete.
We also got a number of questions about the role of glass in this global sand crisis. Dan from Silver Spring, Florida, left this note in our inbox.
I've been reading articles that seem to contradict themselves. I read articles and hear articles on NPR about how the world is running out of sand and how we are not going to not have enough sand to make all the glass that we need for building and windows and stuff like that. But on the other hand, local municipalities and states are no longer recycling glass because they say it's not worth it to recycle glass. If we're running out of sand, why are we not recycling glass?
Dan, thanks very much for calling in with that question. Add to Dan's question this email from Greg, who writes, "We live in Washington State. Here it is difficult to find a recycler that takes glass. I guess it is just not profitable enough. All this glass is made out of sand. It can be used for fiberglass insulation and many of the items traditionally made out of sand and could take the pressure off of sand consumption." Vince, how does glass recycling fit into this crisis, if at all?
So first of all, glass recycling, great. By all means, recycle glass whenever you can. You can recycle glass pretty effectively. You basically turn it into, you crush it down into glass sand and you can make new glass out of it. That's the good news. I should also mention, so the idea of a shortage of sand isn't really such an issue when we're talking about glass. Glass is probably the number two thing that we use sand for after concrete, but it's many orders of magnitude less. The quantities that we use of it are much, much less. So it's not, glass sand isn't really creating the kinds of, you know, environmental pressures, and it's definitely not generating the kind of violence that we're talking about with construction sand. You know, there are some problems with it, but so you can recycle glass. The problem, as always, really boils down to cost. I mean, it's just not always cost effective because of the way the systems are set up and the amount of energy that it takes to smash down glass and sort it out and get it back into the production chain. It's often just cheaper to dig up and use new glass. So until those basic economics change, recycling is really kind of fighting a losing battle. I mean, it's not only glass, by the way. It's pretty much every kind of recycling in this country is not terribly economical. That's a whole nother tangent, but it really boils down to dollars and cents, right? From an environmental perspective, obviously we should be recycling all the glass we can, but bottom line is it's not that cost effective.
I should note we did have a conversation on this program about recycling and whether or not our existing recycling systems in this country are even working. You can find that conversation on our website, the1a.org. That's the word the number one, the letter a.org. Christian emailed, I work at a concrete batch plant that produces 500 to 700 yards of concrete each day. As I'm writing this, I'm sitting in a front-end loader, watching a semi dump 20-odd tons of sand into one of our bins. As many as five trucks travel 20 miles each way all day long to transport our sand and rock. The amount of fuel required for our small operation is staggering, to say the least. My concern is less about the rising demand of sand and more about the millions of barrels of fuel that we as a society burn on a daily basis. Vince, what about that aspect of it, these kind of downstream costs of moving sand around the world?
Really excellent point. I'm so glad that somebody in the industry pointed that out. That's a huge problem. This goes back to what I was saying earlier about how we're having to go further and further to get sand. I mean, sand is really heavy. A cubic yard of sand weighs about a ton, and you need thousands of tons just to build your average, you know, a hospital or a strip mall. So the guy who left that message is absolutely right. That requires lots and lots of truck trips, which means that much more greenhouse gas going into the atmosphere, that much more fuel being burned, that much more wear and tear on the roads. And that is absolutely happening in a big way. I mean, here in California, for instance, the state legislature came out with a report a little while ago saying that the haul distance, the average distance that they need to haul a truckload of sand, has about doubled in the last few years. And if it keeps going, that it's bound to keep increasing because there are several areas in California that are just completely tapped out. And that's happening more and more all across the country. We're having to bring in the sand from further and further away, which means lots and lots more truck traffic, which means lots and lots more fuel being burned.
Let's talk a little bit about what might happen from here, what solutions there might be before our time is up. Willix asks, are there any alternatives to use other than sand for concrete? Stephanie asked on Facebook, can your guests talk about substitutions for things involving sand? For example, hempcrete could be a huge sand saver if the U.S. would get over the unnecessary fear of the crop hemp. Any other good substitutes? Now, Vince, I don't know if hempcrete is a thing. I get the feeling sometimes that people who are advocates of hemp put hemp up as a solution for every societal ill, maybe with some reasonable options, but hempcrete? Really?
I can't really speak to hempcrete. I know that it exists.
Okay, so it is a thing. This is not just something that Stephanie invented. There is such a thing as hempcrete.
All I can tell you is I've heard about it.
Okay.
I've read about it. I know that folks are working on it. And what can I say? More power to them. I don't know if it'll actually work, but great. Because really, we need to have everybody looking at all possible solutions. So there is, you know, there are in fact a lot of people working on a lot of different ways to get out of this problem. There's a lot of research going on around making concrete that uses less sand or that uses other things in place of sand. Besides hemp, there's shredded plastic, there's bamboo. I know there's an outfit in Denmark, a company that claims to have found a way that you can use desert sand for concrete. Like I say, I haven't, you know, whether or not it works, I don't know, but I know that they're working on it. So there are lots of folks working on those kinds of alternatives. And I say, absolutely, more power to them. We should support and encourage all of them. But at the end of the day, we really have a problem of volume, right? Sand is the thing that we consume more of than anything else in the world except air and water. We use about 50 billion tons of sand every year. That's enough to cover the entire state of California. All right. So even if we could replace all of that sand with hemp or with bamboo or whatever, we'd want, you know, very quickly we'd start to have a problem with those things, right? Because we're just using so much of it. It's such an incredible amount that ultimately, I don't think that can be sustained. I think that's the real problem, is just that we're consuming too much.
And Vince, before we let you go, what does the average person do about this? This feels like such a gigantic, intractable problem that I'm not sure what I should be doing to help.
Yeah, so it seems really overwhelming, absolutely. But I think the way to think about it for your average person is, don't just think about, oh, what can I do about the sand, the shortage of sand? realize that sand is just one of many natural resources that we're using too much of, right? We know we're using too much fresh water. We're cutting down too many forests. We're fishing too many fish out of the sea. And the real solution is do whatever you can to just consume less, to make your footprint smaller,
right,
to live a life that's a little more sustainable. Think about ways that you can reduce your consumption of whatever.
I should say, by the way, I did do a quick Google search. There's a company called American Lime Technology that does use hempcrete. It is a real thing. It is made of the woody core of the hemp plant mixed with a lime-based binder, but it says that it is light enough to float in water, but it is not used as a structural element. It's used as an insulating infill. Vince Beiser is the author of The World in a Grain, the story of sand and how it transformed civilization. It hits shelves tomorrow. Vince, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.